Hello everyone, this is Matthias Bohlen with another episode of the OOP 2013 Conference Podcast. At the conference we have speakers from all over the world, and today I'm happy to welcome Ellen Gottesdiener from Sudbury, Massachusetts. Hello Ellen, nice to have you here.
Matthias, hi and hello to everyone.
Ellen, before we go into exceptional things you are doing at OOP, please tell us a little bit about yourself and about what you do every day.
Yes, well, I'm a coach, facilitator, consultant, trainer, all of those things. And we work with organizations to help them collaborate to discover and deliver valued products. We work with product and project teams and leaders, mostly large to medium organizations, occasionally small groups. And many of the clients that we work with are transitioning to Agile or using Agile, and some of them are using more traditional practices, and they recognize that they want to adapt practices that are under that umbrella of Agile.
Okay. So you're with development teams or with the requirement specification teams, or what is the typical working environment?
Well, it really varies quite a bit. Oftentimes they're development or delivery teams, which include people that do analysis work.
Right.
Similarly, we work with a business analysis or requirements group. In the U.S., we have less of what's called requirements engineers. More often, you'll see in more traditional organizations, you'll see business analysts, perhaps, in some kind of community of practice. There's really a great deal of variety there. We also are brought in quite a bit now, more and more, by product development teams that aren't within IT in and of itself, because they recognize how crucial identifying the product requirements are. So, we're fairly well known as experts in requirements, business analysis, and product management, as well as collaboration practices. And one of the things that we sometimes do when one of our clients brings us in and they're pretty much using traditional practices is something that we'll sometimes refer to as stealth agile.
What's that? Stealth agile.
Stealth agile means sort of under the cover without explicitly yelling out the A word, agile or lean. We're just doing it. We're using those practices because they make sense. We're not marketing or advertising the fact that you could label some of these practices as agile lean practices. That's not what's important.
So that the label doesn't become an additional barrier, right?
Exactly. You got it. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of barriers, what are some of the planning and analysis struggles and barriers to successful agile transformation you see in your work?
Well, it's interesting because some of them are newer, based on the ever-increasing use of agile and lean practices. And some of them are the ones that have been around for a while. Some of the newer ones are that a lot of teams struggle with uncertainty, balancing surety with uncertainty.
Okay.
Because everybody recognizes you are building your product or maintaining your product or enhancing it based on requirements. So they're always important, regardless of what method you're using. But now with Agile and Lean practices, some teams have struggled because they've completely abandoned analysis, or they struggle because mentally it's hard to figure out, well, how do you do planning when you don't know what it is you're going to build?
Yes.
So that balancing of how to think about the certainty of the requirements versus what you might build in the future, which really comes down to, for us in the work that we do, we think about product options. It really comes down to options in the product. How teams work with that, that's one of the big areas that we help a lot of teams with and see as a pattern over and over again.
Options. I like that. Is option the opposite of requirement?
Opposite of requirements, I would say, well, no, not really. What we've sort of cast the idea of, you know, requirements are very specific. What you need to build right now, you know you need to build it. But there are different time horizons for what it is you're going to build. You when you're planning, you're thinking out in the future. We think about three different time horizons. And we write about this in the book, Discover to Deliver, Mary Gorman and I. There's the big view, the preview, and the now view. The now view is the requirements. That's what we're going to build. And we have very clear acceptance criteria. We know how to verify what we're going to build. And of course, we need to have some validation criteria to test after delivery that we built the right thing. So before we go into another delivery cycle and we go through discovery again, you know, we have a good idea that we're on the right track. So requirements are very certain and they're built, you know, they're a short time horizon. That now view is weeks, right? And if you're using Kanban, it's your work in progress. The preview is more like a release view, typically 2 months, but it could be a month to two, unless you're really doing a great job with continuous integration and continuous delivery. And then it's going to be much shorter than a month to 2 months. But that release view, those things that used to be that we're calling in the now view requirements, they're really just things that you know you need to build in the next release. And the big view are much longer time horizon things. Those are wants. Those wants are things that you will plan out at a very sketchy level over a year to 2 or 3 year time horizon. Those are things that are going to show up as features on a product roadmap.
And they are more or less options, right?
Yes, all of them are options. It's not till the now view when you're really clear what you're building right now. You've taken you go down from wants to needs to requirements.
Okay, from wants to needs to requirements. Interesting.
And there's options, you know, when you're transitioning and planning, if you're using a time box approach like Scrum and you're planning an iteration, you go and look at your product backlog and you look at the options in the backlog. That's really what your backlog is. It's a set of unrealized product options.
Right, right.
And you're pulling options that you, based on your validation feedback and what's happening in the market and all your value criteria, you pull out the options that are most likely to deliver the value you need next.
And you commit to those options in the moment when you pull them into work in progress.
Bingo. Or yes.
Yes.
So another way to think about it, and you know, we're really very excited about getting people aware of this very simple idea that requirements are really just unvalidated options.
Yes.
For solving needs. And if we can recast this idea of requirements in that way, then we're going to recognize that we need to pull together the stakeholders, act as partners, be very transparent about what the value is, and be able to make very timely, fast decision with clear decision criteria about what we need to build next. And it ends up being very efficient.
I like this approach. I also use it in my coaching work. And I've realized that it may be one way to get outside the iron triangle.
Yes, that's absolutely right. Yeah, it really works. And it's very straightforward when people get the hang of it. And what we've done, and we've articulated it in this book, is created a sort of visual language that you can use as you're using these practices. So everybody is on the same page, whether you're coming from the technology partnership of the stakeholders or the business part of the partnership or the customer part of the partnership. Everyone's on the same page.
You have talked about your new book that you co-authored with Mary Gorman. It's called Discover to Deliver, right?
Yes. The full title is Discover to Deliver, agile product planning and analysis.
Please tell us a little bit about it. Who is it for? Who should read it?
So the audience for this book is really a variety of disciplines. It includes analysts and product, as well as project management folks,
okay,
architects, developers, testers and QA people, agile coaches, architects, and anybody that's involved in discovering and delivering the product. After all, it is the product needs where all stakeholder needs come together, right? All those communities need to come together. So they need to collaborate really well to figure out what they're going to build next. So the book is about some essential planning and analysis practices for delivering a valued product. And the idea is that all of these disciplines come together to have a shared understanding of the product needs and collaborate very powerfully and do it continually. So these are practices you're going to use every day to rapidly discover the product needs and to collaborate in a way that's very transparent. Everybody gets on the same page. We want to streamline and simplify planning and analysis, not make it too simple and certainly not make it too complex. We can't skip analysis. And planning can't skip analysis. Those are really interwoven when we're talking about agile lean practices. So a lot of times teams have conversations about what they're going to build, but they're not really they're not good conversations. They're not structured conversations. So we've coined this idea of this term structured conversation. And just borrowing from the Agile Manifesto about having good face-to-face communications.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we have to have some structure around those communication.
Can you give me an example about such a structured conversation? How does it work?
Well, it's really a family of practices that is basically based on this meta process. The meta process is explore, evaluate, and confirm. Explore, evaluate, and confirm.
Okay.
So we're exploring the options, and we look at options across the product from a point of view of dimensions, which I'll explain in a minute. It's very simple, but it's a holistic way to look at what the options are for a product. And then when we evaluate, we take clear, crisp, concise, agreed upon value criteria, and we slice or evaluate the options for the product. And then we confirm, you know, the conversation is not over until we confirm that we know we're going to build it correctly. That's the acceptance criteria from a verification point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And know also, very importantly, that we're building the right thing. And that's acceptance criteria for validation. So The conversation is about explore, evaluate, and confirm. It's ongoing, it's systematic, it's collaborative, and it's about this discovery and delivery of product options.
This reminds me of real options on the one side and of deliberate discovery by Dan North on the other side.
Yeah, it turned out, you know, these are indeed orthogonal takes of the same thing. We're not with Chris's real options. It's very similar to that in Dan's deliberate discovery. We've been working on these practices with our clients in parallel, and they're all coming around. They're all surrounding the same idea and set of practices. So we're not talking about real options from a financial point of view. We really just mean options in terms of alternatives.
Yes. And,
so yes, they are orthogonal ideas. It's a bit of a different take. We're certainly in sync with what Dan and Chris have been talking about. Another piece of what we've done, and you know, this I've been in this requirement space for a long time, and there's a lot of different angles and ways to look at requirements. And one unfortunate way of doing it is that people talk about functional and non-functional requirements, and those are kind of lousy terms.
Yeah.
Non-functional makes it sound like it's not important, but in fact, those requirements are just as important, sometimes even more important. And over the years of working on this, Mary Gorman, my co-author, and I have sort of come up with these dimensions to the product that really, really resonate with people. And there's seven product dimensions that encapsulate both functional and non-functional requirements.
What are these seven dimensions?
The seven dimensions, and I'm just going to tell them to you in the order that we describe them in the book, although you could use any order in thinking about them.
But okay.
The user, interface, action, data, control, environment, and quality attributes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
For those people that are familiar with the idea of non-functional requirements, three of those seven dimensions are about what's called non-functional requirements. Specifically, interfaces, you know, the things the product connects to, users, systems, and devices, that's technically speaking one of those non-functionals. Or here's one that a lot of teams, and unfortunately we've experienced a lot of agile lean teams ignoring this, and that is environment. That is that the product has to conform to, if you're building a physical product, physical properties, but whether you're building a physical property or not, it has to conform to technology platforms.
Yes.
There's options for those. And the third dimension that falls in that non-functional category are quality attributes. And those are the properties that qualify the operation and development of the product. You know, those are the things that people usually call the illities.
Yeah, utilities, yeah.
Yeah. Safety, recoverability, performance, reliability, usability, and so forth.
Portability and so on, yeah.
Exactly. So those are the three, you know, so we want to think those are three that fall into that category in the science, if you will, of requirements engineering. Of non-functional requirements, but all of them are interrelated dimensions. And you can ask questions, and we help people learn how to ask really good questions to elicit options within a dimension and across those dimensions. So you can think more holistically about your product needs.
So, for example, if I have a stakeholder and I'm talking to him and he always mentions one dimension, then I go ahead and ask for the other dimensions to get a more holistic view on it.
Yes. And when we're actually doing this work with product and project teams, we are working collaboratively. So we really try to shy away from doing one-on-one elicitation.
Yeah.
And we will work together in collaborative workshops or discovery sessions or discovery workshops, however you want to call it. And we'll take these seven dimensions and we use icons for them and so that you can look at them visually and get it. And we'll, in the workshop, we'll elicit options across those seven dimensions and have them on the wall. And we call this the options board. And it will also have the value criteria that we've covered. And we look at those options and decision makers can then select a subset of options for whatever the next planning cycle we're talking about, whether we're talking about the now view, the preview, or the big view. So this structured conversation is exploring and evaluating and confirming options across those dimensions, regardless of planning view, regardless of which horizon. It's the same conversation. It's the it could be the same value criteria. See, the thing is value becomes really front and center. What we want to do is that at each planning cycle, we return to the value criteria that these partners, these stakeholders have. And we say, okay, well, you know what? We recognize that value is in the eyes of the beholder.
Yes. Quality is some. It's always quality to somebody.
Exactly. And value can change depending on market conditions and time. So we return to value and we take a look and see, do we need to update? Do we need to change our value criteria? And one of the other things that we try to do is, instead of being just single focused on value of the end customer, we want to be holistic about the stakeholders as well. Mm-hmm. So we think about this idea of product partners, and a successful product depends on a partnership. And specifically, we're talking about customers, business, and technology partners.
And that's good. That's a good vocabulary. I like that.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I mean, we're excited about the fact that we've got this very simple, we think simple, but rich vocabulary to enhance and maintain this structured conversation. So the product partners, again, are the customer, business, and technology, and they each have different value criteria.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, we want to identify who those partners are and what their value criteria are. We've seen situations where all of a sudden, you know, I recently had a product manager who would be in the partnership. That would be the business. And, of course, the product manager acts as the champion or in product owner, but we prefer the term product champion for the product. And they have to sort of balance the customer and the business and the technology.
Yeah.
So we were having a conversation at the options board about options around the environment. And part of environment is the platform, including the database management system platform. Mm-hmm. So people on the team, there were some lead architects there, and they're, oh, yes, we are, we're a SQL shop, Oracle in some cases. And the lead architect, this is a global organization for the globally, said, whoa, wait a minute. We're actually thinking about using the cloud for some of our DBMS, for our database storage.
Oh, okay. That's a big difference.
And so nobody had a conversation about that option. So, you know, that option got put on the options board. And then we went back to our value criteria, and he was saying, from a technology point of view, one of the values he wants from this product that we're actually doing product road mapping around, one of his values is that he could use this first release as learning about, you know, cloud computing, because architecturally it could have some really powerful possibilities for the enterprise. Mm-hmm. The product manager was like, whoa, wait a minute, what does that mean? And all of a sudden they had some very rich, inefficient, very fast and efficient conversations about what he meant by that. She got educated about that value from a broader point of view. He got educated from her about some of the concerns or risks that she had about that. And when it came down to collecting the options for the next release across those dimensions, including environment, because of risk and because of some business value needs that she clearly had, that option had to be demoted. There was a conversation that was very transparent about that. And that would not have happened, you know, in that, you know, 4 minutes, unless those options had been put up on the wall and the value criteria had been transparently listed, because those are also listed up on the wall.
Yeah, maybe those two stakeholders would otherwise go into kind of debate and litigate and so on.
Right. Or never had the conversation and then said later, well, wait a minute. Why did you choose that? What we're having problems with security issues here. What's going on? And, you know, they would have, there could have been blowback, as they say, later on, instead of that conversation up front.
That would be even worse if you discover later on, after some weeks or months, that the chosen option was not really viable.
Yeah. So you know, a lot of this is also about trust building and good collaboration. And it's using these practices and this visual language to structure the conversation, a la the term structured conversation.
That sounds really good. That sounds like useful ways for enabling project and product communities.
Yeah, absolutely. Very powerful.
At OOP 2013, you're also giving a half-day tutorial on this, right?
Yes, and it's called, I believe the title is Product Partnership.
Yes.
And the subtitle is Using Structured Conversations to Deliver Value. So yes, the concepts in that tutorial, we'll talk about those concepts. We'll do a workshop, an exercise using them, and see how to use structured conversations in a practical way. You know, my goal is that people will be able to go back and use these practices right away, and they make a lot of sense to folks.
That's good, because if you put this into practice, people will understand much better what these concepts are all about.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. So, the book that we wrote also, we used the practices that we talk about it in the book in Discover to Deliver.
Okay.
And, so we use this visual language and illustrations. We even have color in the book, and wanted to design the book in a way that would be compelling and appealing to sort of the creative as well as analytic sides. So, so the symbols, for example, that we use for each of the seven dimensions and you know, for the conversation and value are things that you can just look at and resonate with, hopefully very simply and easily.
Ellen, thanks for being with us in this podcast today. And dear listeners, I highly recommend Ellen's tutorial at OOP. Ellen, I think we'll need a bigger room for it.
That would be fabulous. I would love that. Look forward to seeing you all.